You are now listening to Mark's Unexplained World by Mark the Medium. Available on YouTube and most other podcast platforms. This episode is about rabies. So it's over to you, Mark.
Rabies was historically referred to as hydrophobia, or otherwise known as the fear of water. This fear is due to the symptoms of panic experienced when the patient is presented with any liquid to drink. It is a viral disease that causes encephalitis, or swelling in the brain, both in humans and other mammals. As well as the fear of water, symptoms can include fever, nausea, vomiting, violent movements, uncontrolled excitement, confusion, and the loss of consciousness, along with the inability to move parts of the body, with the results of catching rabies virtually always leading to death. The time period between contracting the disease and the start of symptoms is usually 1 to 3 months, but can vary anything from less than a week to more than a year, depending on the time period and distance the virus must have travelled along the peripheral nerves to reach the central nervous system of the body. Rabies causes around 59,000 deaths worldwide per year, which breaks down to about 40% of the deaths being children, who are all under the age of 15. It is now classified as a neglected tropical disease. Greetings, Unexplainers. Thank you for tuning in once again to listen to this disease-travelling episode of Mark's Unexplained World. My name is Mark Hughes. I'm a psychic medium, a ufologist, and a true crime buff. And just to give you a better idea of who I am and what I do, every Monday night I do a podcast on the various subjects under the Unexplained banner. These subjects include ufology, hauntings, disasters, and all sorts of paranormal phenomena, including true crime, unsolved crime, and missing people. So if you are listening to this show on YouTube, please give us a friendly review and a thumbs up. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe to my channel. Of course, if you are listening on any other of the podcast platforms, again, give us a like and a follow. I gratefully thank you in advance. In this episode, I'm going to tell you about the dark story surrounding rabies. And this week's necessary disclaimer. This story is a tale that sadly involves death through sickness, including minors and animals, so may prove upsetting to some. You listen at your own discretion. Also, all opinions and comments are strictly my own, but the facts still remain. I also apologise if I pronounce anything incorrectly. And to be honest with you, this episode will be no different due to the number of scientific words that I came across in my research. I mean, why can't diseases or illnesses just be called things like John Smith disease or Collins illness? Anyway, I digress. Let's get back to the story. First up, and I'll give you some fair warning, part one is a bit of a science lesson, and I'm sure to say things differently, so do pay attention, people. The term rabies is derived from the Latin name of rabies, meaning madness. It is caused by a number of lysoviruses from the Greek language, which include both the rabies virus and the Australian bat lysovirus. And according to scientists, the Duvenhage lysovirus may also be the cause of the rabies-like infection. The rabies virus is a type of species in the lysovirus genus. The lysovirin itself only has a helical symmetry of a length of roughly 180 nanometers and a cross-section of about 75 nanometers. On a short but interesting side note, the nanometer, or otherwise known as the nanometer, is a unit of length in the International System of Units equal to 1/1,000,000th of a meter. See? That was a short side note, wasn't it? Anyway. Right. These lysovirins are enveloped and have a single-stranded RNA, or ribonucleic acid, genome with a negative sense. This RNA, or ribonucleic acid, genome of the virus encodes 5 genes whose order is highly conserved. These include nucleoprotein, phosphoprotein, matrix protein, glycoprotein, and the viral RNA polymerase. For the rabies virus to enter the cells, trimeric spikes on the exterior of the membrane of the virus interact with a specific cell receptor, with the most likely one being the acetylcholine receptor, I think that's right, which is an organic compound that functions on the brain. This cellular membrane then allows entry of the rabies virus into the cell by the way of an endosome. Another interesting side note here. Endosomes are a collection of sorting cells which is part of the membrane transport pathway. They can be classified as early sorting or late sorting, depending on their stage post-internalization. Endosomes represent a major sorting compartment of the body's system in cells. The virus then uses the acidic environment of that endosome and binds to its membrane while simultaneously releasing its 5 proteins and single-strand RNA, or ribonucleic acid, genome into the cytoplasm, or the fluid that fills the cell. I hope you can keep up. Once the virus is within a muscle or nerve cell, it then undergoes replication. When there is enough viral proteins, it will then begin to synthesize new negative strands from the template of the original positive strands of RNA. These negative strands will then form complexes and travel to the inner membrane of the cell where protein has already embedded itself. This protein then coils around the complex of proteins, taking some of the host cell membrane with it, which will form the new outer envelope of the virus particle. The rabies virus then buds and grows from this cell. From the point of entry, the rabies virus is neurotropic, which means it is capable of infecting nerve tissue as it travels along the neural pathways into the central nervous system. The virus is also pretty clever in that it usually grows by first infecting muscle cells close to the site of the infection, because doing this enables it to replicate without being noticed so much by the host's immune system. Once enough of the virus has been replicated, it then travels through the nerve cell axon within the body, and once it reaches the cell body, it then travels rapidly to the central nervous system and eventually reaches the brain. On another interesting side note, an axon or nerve fibre is a long, slender projection of nerve cell or neuron in vertebrates that typically conducts the electrical impulses known as action potentials away from the nerve cell body. The function of the axon is to transmit information to different neurons, muscles and glands. A single axon, with all its branches taken together, can target multiple parts of the brain and generate thousands of synaptic terminals. After the brain is infected, the virus will then travel centrifugally to the autonomic nervous system, eventually migrating to the salivary glands, where it is ready to be transmitted to the next host. After this first short break, in part two, we will look at the rabies virus transmission and some of the signs and symptoms of the infection.
This show is brought to you courtesy of Neil Packer and the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre. Find them online at www.hauntedresearchcentre.com or at 9211 Regent Street, Hinckley, LE10 1AW. Open on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. for guided tours of the haunted rooms at just £3 per person. Booking is essential at all times, and over 16s only, please, unless accompanied by an adult. The haunted rooms are extremely haunted, and paranormal activity could and has taken place at any time. Some areas and particular objects or items can be quite scary and unnerving. Membership is available for £25 to qualify for selective offers. And why not download the app available on both iOS and Android for only £3.99. to keep up to date with what is coming up at the centre.
Rabies has been known since around 2000 BC. The first written record of rabies is in the Mesopotamian Codex of Eshnunna, circa 1930 BC, which says that the owner of a dog that was showing symptoms of rabies should take preventative measures against its bites. The first recorded case of rabies that caused deaths in both dogs and humans is found in the Mosaic Usmuna Code of Babylon in 2300 BC. And in ancient Greece, rabies was apparently caused by Lyssa, who was the spirit of mad rage. The first recorded case of rabies being reported in the Americas was by a priest in Mexico in 1703. And in the 1st century AD, the Roman scholar Celsus correctly suggested that rabies was transmitted by the saliva of a biting animal. All warm-blooded species, people included, can become infected with the rabies virus and develop symptoms, so it is a sort of non-discriminative virus. Birds were first artificially infected with rabies in 1884. However, these infected birds were largely, if not wholly, asymptomatic, meaning that they showed no symptoms and soon recovered. With other species of birds developing rabies antibodies after feeding on rabies-infected mammals. So, it is safe to say, or unsafe to say, depending on your point of view, of course, that most animals can be infected with the virus and then transmit the disease to humans. Over time, the rabies virus has also adapted to grow in the cells of cold-blooded vertebrae, like turtles, tortoises, snakes, frogs, toads, and even the good old-fashioned honeybee. Figures say that worldwide, about 99% of human rabies cases come from the domesticated dog, with other sources claiming that rabies in humans comes from other animals like monkeys, raccoons, foxes, skunks, cattle, wolves, coyotes, and cats. The rabies virus can also spread through exposure to wild carnivorans like infected bears or groundhogs, weasels, and other domestic farm animals. But lagomorphs, such as hares, rabbits, chipmunks, gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats and squirrels, are almost never found to be infected with the rabies virus and are not known to transmit it to humans. And a bite from a mouse, rat or squirrel rarely requires any rabies prevention, mainly because these rodents are typically killed by any encounter with a larger rabid animal and would therefore not be carriers. The rabies virus is usually present in the nerves and saliva of a symptomatic rabid animal, with the root of the infection usually being, but not always, by a bite. In most cases, the infected animal is exceptionally aggressive and exhibits otherwise uncharacteristic behaviour and may attack without any provocation. This behaviour is what is known as viral pathogen behaviour, and it does this to facilitate its transmission to other hosts. After a person has been infected by a bite, the rabies virus then enters the peripheral nervous system. The virus then travels along the efferent nerve towards this central nervous system. Unfortunately, at this stage, the virus cannot be easily detected within the host. When the virus eventually reaches the brain, it rapidly causes what is known as the prodromal phase, otherwise known as encephalitis or inflammation of the brain, which is the beginning of the symptoms. In some cases, rabies may also inflame the spinal cord, producing transverse myelitis, or TM for short, which is a rare neurological condition wherein the spinal cord gets inflamed. Once the patient becomes symptomatic, treatment is almost never effective. It is, of course, theoretically possible for a rabies-infected human to transmit the virus to others by either biting or otherwise. However, no such case has ever been documented. This is mainly because infected humans are usually hospitalised and all necessary precautions against any infection spreading have already been taken. I suppose I should point out here, in case any of you listeners were wondering, from what I have read, any casual contact, such as touching a person with rabies or contact with non-infectious fluid or tissue, meaning urine, blood or faeces, does not constitute an exposure and does not require any post-exposure prevention. However, I suppose I should also point out here at this stage that as the rabies virus is present in both sperm and vaginal secretions, it might be possible for rabies to spread through sex. The period between infection and the first symptoms, or the incubation period, in humans is usually about 1 to 3 months. However, having said that, it has been known for this incubation period to be either as short as 4 days or as long as 6 years. This all depends, of course, on three factors: the location, the severity of the wound, and the amount of virus introduced to the body. The initial symptoms of the rabies virus are pretty non-specific, with things like a mild fever and or a headache. As the rabies virus progresses through the body, it starts to cause inflammation of the brain and the meninges. Time for an interesting side note here, I think. In anatomy, the meninges are the three membranes that envelope the brain and the spinal cord, with its primary function being to protect the central nervous system. Injuries involving the meninges can result in a hemorrhage or a localized bleeding outside the blood vessels. As the rabies virus progresses throughout the body, further symptoms can include slight or partial paralysis, anxiety, insomnia, confusion, agitation, abnormal behaviour, paranoia, terror, and hallucinations, along with another unusual symptom, and that is being hydrophobia, the fear of water. All these symptoms will then progress to delirium, a coma, and then ultimately death, which usually occurs from 2 to 10 days after the first symptoms appear. I want to take a closer look at the symptom of the fear of water. From what I have read, it appears that throughout history, rabies has occasionally been referred to as hydrophobia. This condition seems to refer to a set of symptoms that manifest themselves during the later stages of the rabies infection, in which the person not only has difficulty in swallowing, but also shows signs of panic when presented with liquids to drink, and so consequently cannot quench their thirst. So, because of this lack of water in the body, the saliva production is greatly increased, and consequently any attempts to drink, or even the intention or suggestion of a drink, may cause excruciatingly painful spasms of the muscles in the throat and larynx. And since the infected individual cannot swallow saliva or water, the rabies virus has a greater chance of being transmitted, mainly because it multiplies and accumulates in the salivary glands, which can then be transmitted through biting. It's a clever little bugger, isn't it?
You can say that again.
It's a clever little bugger, isn't it? This fear of water, or hydrophobia, is commonly associated with what is known as furious rabies, which affects about 80% of rabies-infected people around the world. This furious rabies causes irrational aggression in the host, which aids in the spread of the virus through animal bites with the foaming at the mouth effect, so also being the cause of the accumulation of saliva. This foaming of the mouth effect is also commonly associated with public perception of popular culture. The remaining 20% of people with the virus may experience a paralytic form of rabies that is marked by muscle weakness or loss of sensation and paralysis, with this form of rabies not usually causing any fear of water. After this second short break, in part 3, we will look at preventions, treatments, and how the rabies virus over time has affected various countries around the world.
Fright Nights was established in 1999 as the first company in the world to offer overnight ghost hunt experiences to the general public, pioneering paranormal events since the last century. Fright Nights operates at hundreds of the UK's most haunted and exclusive venues. All events have their own team of experienced paranormal investigators, mediums and psychics. They have a VIP members club for regular returning guests, offering loyalty discounts and exclusive invitation-only events. They can also host private events for your family and friends. You can contact them on 07 852 998 628 or email them at office@frightnights.co.uk or take a look at their website at www.frightnights.co.uk, where you can see the many locations they investigate and learn about them and the opportunities they have available. Hundreds of ghost hunters join Fright Nights every month for the most thrilling ghost hunting experiences they'll never forget. If you haven't been on a ghost hunt before, then why not join them to see what it's all about? Why not visit their social media sites for up-to-date information on all the places they visit and to see what's coming up in the future? They look forward to seeing you all soon. Fright Nights ghost hunting events. Remember, only the original will do.
Almost all human exposure to the rabies virus used to be fatal until a vaccine was developed in 1885 by the chemist and microbiologist Louis Pasteur and the French physician and bacteriologist Emile Roux, with the original vaccine being harvested from infected rabbits from which the rabies virus in the nerve tissue was weakened by allowing it to dry for 5 to 10 days. There is now a less expensive purified chicken embryo cell vaccine and a purified Vero cell rabies vaccine, which these days is now readily available and effective. Immunisation before exposure to the rabies virus has been used in both the human and animal population, where in many countries around the world, domesticated animals, cats, dogs, etc., are required by law to be vaccinated. And in Belgium, France, Germany, and the United States, they use what is known as a recombinant vaccine called VRG, which has been used to prevent outbreaks of rabies in undomesticated animals, such as raccoons, squirrels, etc. And on an interesting side note, did you know that on the 28th of September every year, it is World Rabies Day?
No, I did not. Is it?
Oh, yes, it is. Apparently, World Rabies Day is an international awareness campaign coordinated by the Global Alliance for Rabies Control, which is a non-profit organisation with the headquarters being in the United States. The date of the 28th of September is chosen because it is the anniversary of the death of Louis Pasteur, who, with the collaboration of his colleagues, developed the very first rabies vaccine. The aim of World Rabies Day is to help raise awareness about the impact that the rabies virus has on both humans and animals, and to provide information and advice on how to prevent the disease, especially in at-risk communities, and support advocacy for increased efforts in rabies control. Treatment after the exposure to the rabies virus can prevent the disease if it is given to the patient within the first 10 days, with the rabies vaccine being 100% effective when it is given before any symptoms of rabies appear. There are more than 15 million people worldwide every year getting vaccinated after any potential exposure. As I mentioned earlier, once the rabies virus develops, death is pretty much certain to follow. So the best course of treatment is palliative care in a hospital setting with large doses of good old-fashioned painkillers and sedatives in preference to physical restraint. There was a treatment that had been proposed known only as the Milwaukee Protocol, which involved putting a person into a chemically induced coma and using antiviral medications. It initially came into use in 2003 following a teenage girl named Gina Geese or Geese from Wisconsin, becoming the first person known to have survived rabies without preventative treatments before symptom onset. This Milwaukee Protocol has been tried multiple times since. However, it has now been assessed as an ineffective treatment. In 2010, an estimated 26,000 people died from the rabies virus, which is down from the 54,000 in 1990. With the majority of deaths occurring in Asia and Africa. As of 2015 in India, there were approximately 20,847 deaths, which was followed by China, who had approximately 6,000 deaths. Also in 2015, a collaboration between the World Health Organization, World Organization of Animal Health, Food and Agricultural Organization of the United Nations, and the Global Alliance for Rabies Control have a goal of eliminating all deaths from the rabies virus by the year 2030. So let's take a look at just a handful of countries around the world and see how each one of them has dealt with or are currently dealing with the rabies virus. India has the highest rate of human rabies in the world. This is due to it having a high number of stray dogs, whose number has greatly increased since the 2001 law came into effect that forbade them from being killed. And although Australia has an official rabies-free status, the Australian bat lysavirus that was discovered back in 1996 is a rabies-causing virus related to the rabies virus, which is prevalent in the Australian native bat population. And on an interesting side note, the Australian bat lysavirus, or otherwise known as the ABLV, is an enzootic virus closely related to rabies. It was first identified in a 5-month-old juvenile bat called the black flying fox collected near Ballina in northern New South Wales, Australia, in January 1995 during a national surveillance program for the recently identified Hendra virus. The Australian bat lysavirus is the 7th member of the genus Lysavirus, which includes the rabies virus and the only lysavirus member present in Australia. In the United States, canine-specific rabies has been eradicated, But rabies in common wild animals and an and an average of 100 domesticated dogs every year becomes infected from other wildlife. From 1960 to 2018 in the United States, a total of 125 human rabies cases were reported, with 36 victims attributed to dog bites during international travel. Among the 89 infections acquired in the United States, 62 of them were attributed to bats. The most recent rabies death in the United States was in the November of 2021, where a Texas child was bitten by a bat in the late August that same year, and due to his parents failing to get him any treatment, he sadly died less than 3 months later. Cambodia has about 800 cases of human rabies per year, making it one of the top countries with human rabies infections and death. From what I have read and researched, much of this falls down to the lack of animal care. Cambodia has literally hundreds and thousands of rabies-infected animals, yet very little animal surveillance, and very few laws requiring pets and other household animals to be vaccinated. Cambodia is considered a wealthy nation, with the funds available for combating rabies and vaccinating all consenting citizens. But, to be fair, during the recent years, Cambodia has improved significantly in their human rabies medical practices, with clinics all over the country being made with treatments and vaccinations on hand, as well as rabies-related education in the school classroom. However, unfortunately, they are still lacking in terms of animal surveillance and treatments, which leads to the virus bleeding into Cambodia's surrounding countries. Mexico, on the other hand, was certified by the World Health Organization as being free of any dog-transmitted rabies in 2019, mainly because in the last 2 years, no cases of dog-to-human transmission had been recorded. There was a time when it was not uncommon for a person who had been bitten by a dog, who was merely suspected of being a rabies carrier, would commit suicide. I mean, let's face it, it was probably thought as the lesser of two evils. And there was also a time when the attachment of the tongue was cut out of the still living patient's mouth and removed, as this was where the rabies virus was thought to originate. However, and with much relief to some patients, I should imagine, this practice soon stopped when the true discovery of the actual cause of rabies was found. In 1885, chemist and microbiologist Louis Pasteur's nerve tissue vaccine was successful and was, over time, progressively improved to reduce the rabies virus side effects. In modern times, the fear of rabies has not diminished. The worry is still there. The disease and its symptoms, mainly agitation, have served as an inspiration for several works of zombie or similarly themed science fiction stories or television franchises. These zombies are often portrayed as rabies which have mutated into a stronger virus, which fills humans, and in some cases animals, with a murderous rage or incurable illness, bringing about carnage and devastation. To be honest, this sounds a little like me when I've run out of beer.
Thank you all for taking the time out to listen to this episode of Mark's Unexplained World. In our next episode, show number 96, we are going to be looking at the Boston Molasses Disaster of 1919. The Boston Molasses Disaster occurred on Wednesday, the 15th of January in the year 1919, in the North End neighbourhood of Boston, Massachusetts. A large storage tank filled with 2.3 million US gallons of molasses, weighing approximately 12,000 metric tons, burst, and the resultant wave of molasses rushed through the streets in an estimated 35 miles per hour, killing 21 people and injuring 150. The event entered local folklore, and residents reported for decades afterwards that the area still smelled of molasses on hot summer days.
This show was written and researched by myself, Mark Hughes, and proofread and edited by Linda Hughes. The pronunciations of all the names and the silly scientific names for all the diseases and goodness knows what else and human body parts and places, though, was all mine. The actors in this episode were Mark Hughes, Linda Hughes and Denise Pooler. With special thanks to Neil Packer and the staff of the Haunted Antiques Paranormal Research Centre in Hinckley. And, of course, a big thank you to everyone for listening. And again, just to add, if you are listening to this show on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up and review with feedback and subscribe to my channel. And if you are listening on any other podcast platforms, again, give us a like and a follow. A thank you in advance. Mark's Unexplained World, because there's more to the paranormal than meets the third eye. And remember, guys, keep it real, because being real is better than being perfect. This show and all its contents are covered by basic copyright of Mark the Medium.